Court. I'm Paul Bloom. I represent the Devall's Bluff School District, Charles Archer and Charles Eads. It's superintendent and principal, respectively, in this case. This is a contempt of court matter. The case, underlying case, was before Judge Susan Weber Wright and this court previously. What the issue is that was raised by the plaintiffs in the case is whether a religious baccalaureate service which was conducted on school property constituted a contempt of court and violated the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. Those are the two issues, and they somewhat overlap, and I'll try to keep them as separate as I can.
What were the sanctions that were imposed, counsel?
There were no sanctions per se. The defendants were directed not to let anything like this ever happen again.
Then you have to pay fees or something?
Well, fees, yes, sir, but in terms of judgment for of some kind
a fine
of penalty.
Or something. None
yes,
of that.
There was nothing like that. In fact, Judge Wright addressed that and said that if it were to recur, then she would look at imposing such a penalty. What happened in this case is that Judge Wright, in the initial litigation, and which was affirmed by this court with some modifications, had directed that the district, the defendants, not supervise, orchestrate, or produce a religious baccalaureate service or have any religious content at graduation ceremonies. Indeed, that's not what happened here. The school previously, prior to the initial litigation, had undertaken school-sponsored religious content baccalaureate services. In deference to the court's order, the defendants knew and let everyone know, and certainly they testified at the contempt hearing that they knew that the school was not to participate in any type of religious baccalaureate service. The testimony was that what happened was the seniors in the class approached the senior sponsors and said, "Can we have a religious baccalaureate service?" And to which the senior sponsors replied something like, "Well, that's up to you, but we can't do that for you. If you want to do that, you better do it yourself and get with it."
Then after that happened, to what degree did anyone connected with the school take part in any of the organizational work or actual carrying out of this baccalaureate program?
Well, here's what happened. The students themselves produced, did everything just about that had to be done.
Just about?
Yes. And there are exceptions, and the teachers themselves testified that they considered themselves, they knew they weren't supposed to do it as teachers, that they consider themselves to be doing this voluntarily and individually, which they have a right to do, unquestionably. Now, some of the discussions regarding the production and so forth of the baccalaureate service probably took place during the senior class meetings, at which Ms. Merrick and Ms. Robinson, the senior class sponsors, were present. That was done, however, during non-instructional time. Those meetings take place during lunch. And under Good News Club versus Milford, there is nothing improper about teachers supervising religious-type meetings. In fact, that's what Good News Club was primarily all about.
But what did the district court find with respect to these facts, bearing in mind, of course, that our standard of review with respect to those fact findings has to be clearly erroneous?
Well, the court found that the school district defendants, and mind you, the district defendants are primarily Charles Archer and Charles Eads, orchestrated the baccalaureate service. The problem with that is, in terms of a finding of fact, is that there is no testimony to support that. Ms. Merrick and Ms. Robinson testified that they did nothing to produce this. Ms. Merrick produced a program, a written program for it, But she only did that at
And she produced the program and did something with the processing of that with school equipment.
Copied it on the school copier.
Yes, sir.
She did that. She produced that program only at the...
She also passed it out.
Yes, sir. And she did that only at the request of two students that is producing it. She did that, she says, primarily on her own time. She copied it on the school copier without the knowledge of the superintendent, but with the understanding that other private individuals could use the school copier for whatever reason. Charles Archer, the superintendent, now mind you, Ms. Merrick and Ms. Robinson aren't defendants. They're employees of the district, certainly, but they're not defendants. And they testified at the contempt hearing that they certainly understood that they were to have no part in the baccalaureate ceremony and insisted that as teachers they did not. Now, Mr. Archer had two instances where he could be considered to have participated in some respect, but it wasn't really participation. Number one, when Ms. Merrick was producing the program, she didn't know how to spell the word Alzheimer, which is the name of a town in Arkansas where one of the speakers, a pastor, had his church. He told her how to spell Alzheimer. The other thing was that he allowed them to use, the students, that is, to use the school auditorium, which is on campus, for the baccalaureate ceremony.
Where's the finding that Archer orchestrated this?
Well, Your Honor, that's in the
I thought the case went off on a question of reasonable appearance of endorsement.
Well, that's what we're getting to, I think, in the Establishment Clause portion, Your Honor.
I see.
But what she said was, and this is on page 4 of our argument, she said, choosing its words carefully, the court directed defendants not to orchestrate, supervise, or recite prayers or other religious messages at their baccalaureate and graduation ceremonies. Orchestrate is defined to arrange or manipulate, especially by means of clever or thorough planning or maneuvering to arrange or direct, now often surreptitiously, to produce a desired effect. And then the court went on to say that upon careful consideration of the evidence, the court finds the defendants are in contempt. More or less simpliciter. What Mr. Archer did with respect to the auditorium was to allow a private group, that is the senior students who wanted to have their own religious baccalaureate service, to use the auditorium.
I'm sorry to keep coming back to this point, but I think it's important that what follows, the last quote, is that the court finds that the district was involved in bringing about
right
service. That's a lot different from orchestration, I think.
Well, the same. Well, I don't know that there is any significant difference, Your Honor.
Okay.
The effect is the same. And I was going to say the only thing that Mr. Archer did was, again, tell Ms. Merrick how to spell Alzheimer, and allow them to use the auditorium. The auditorium is used by any number of private groups. In fact, Mr. Archer listed 17 other groups who had used the auditorium previously. I'm going to reserve the rest of my time, and I'll address the Establishment Clause argument. Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Jerry Schulze, and I'm here on behalf of Steve Warnick. I think Mr. Bloom has presented an interesting hypothetical here today, but I think it's inconsistent with the facts. Mr. Bloom, for instance, told the court just now that there was some testimony about the student sponsor saying, that's up to you, we can't do that for you. I've read through this transcript, and I was there, and I do not recall any such testimony. Mr. Bloom told you that the students did just about everything that had to be done to bring about this ceremony, this religious ceremony. I don't believe there was any testimony to that effect. The testimony was very little had to be done, but the little that had to be done was done in student meetings with student sponsors on campus during the school day. The only evidence of anything that took place individually by a student off campus was that two students asked preachers, one of whom was the father of one of the students, to appear. There is no evidence that anything other than that took place. And I explored as hard as I could to find out, were there any meetings off campus? Did the students ever do anything on their own? The answer was no. When we asked Mr. Archer, who asked you if you could use the auditorium? At first he said, I think it was one of the school sponsors. Now remember, the district is one of the defendants. It is the district that violated the injunction here. Mr. Archer said, at first, I think it was one of the student sponsors that asked me. Later, he said, or one of the students. I can't remember which one. The interesting thing about that fact is, when we asked him who else has been using the auditorium over the last 2 years, he was able to give us usually the name of the individual who asked him to use the auditorium. When the question was, did you violate a court order? Did you intentionally stage a baccalaureate in violation of this order? And he's saying no. Well, who asked you to use the auditorium then? And he can't think of the individual who did it. I hate to have to tell the court that something is a sham, that public officials are carrying on an intentional deception, but gentlemen, that is what is happening here. They fired Steve Warnick and decided to go back to business as usual. And when they went back to business as usual, they got caught. Steve went to the religious ceremony that took place looking exactly like any baccalaureate ceremony at any school. He was handed a brochure, a program that said DeVolds Bluff High School senior class at the top of it, that looked exactly like something that would be handed out at an official formal school function, as the court noted. And this document was put together by one of the school sponsors. It contained information about the senior class that was all official: the official class motto, the official class slogan, the official list of the students graduating, all of this information, with the possible exception of the spelling of the name of the city from which one of the preachers came, was official school information. If you look at the history that the judge looked at, the school had a history of carrying on a religious baccalaureate ceremony. This was one of the things that Steve Warnick complained about the first time that he came up here. The trial judge said that is clearly unconstitutional, and it is. So what the district did was, once Steve Warnick is gone, it's back to business as usual. Once they get called on it, the first thing that's filed is an affidavit by Mr. Archer that says the school had absolutely nothing to do with it. Gentlemen, that was a lie. The school had a lot to do with it, and we proved it. I think that this is a case that calls for some type of serious sanction, something to tell this district, let's don't have a religious baccalaureate in the year 2006. What the trial court did was award attorney's fees, which is all well and good, but it's not enough to keep them from doing this again. I'm not sure what's going to be necessary. I don't know if somebody needs to monitor.
Suppose the students this year were to decide in their own homes, no teachers present, type their own program, don't use the school copier, send one of their people to Mr. Archer saying, this comes from our request to students who have nothing to do with the school, and then as a capstone put on a disclaimer at the bottom of the program saying, this is not sponsored by the school district.
That's an interesting hypothetical.
Because I'm thinking now, every year the South Dakota State Bar puts out a program before, in advance of the State Bar Convention. There's always a Red Mass. There's always a prayer breakfast, both of which are asterisks, followed by asterisks saying, this is not sponsored by the State Bar.
A message like that would go a long way towards curing the problem.
The second part of it is I tremble when I think of the terrible situation we were in 1952. My high school baccalaureate, when a minister gave the program. God, we didn't realize the terror we were living under, did we? The men are crumbling about us. Well, that's another story.
Well, I'm sorry.
I'm trying to give advice to the school district here, in a way.
Well,
I mean, maybe we want to keep them out of jail, don't we?
Your Honor, if someone had given that school district that advice, I think that we might not be here today.
I'm not sure anything will satisfy Mr. Warnick.
Well, perhaps not, but it might have satisfied you and Judge Wright. And what I tell you, I think that if Mr. Warnick had been faced with a situation where the students had genuinely put together a program, or, you know, the question here, I think if you look at Good News, you look at WIG, you look at all of the other cases, there is an effort made to separate it out and say this is not an official school function. The fundamental problem with what happened here is it did look like business as usual. The image that was sent to anyone who was familiar with this litigation, even peripherally familiar, was we're going back to the way we did things before we had to deal with Steve Warnick. And that, to me, is the fundamental problem. It did send the message that this was a school event. There was not only nothing done, no effort made whatsoever, in spite of numerous opportunities. You could put up a sign. I was lucky enough to hear part of the oral arguments on the Supreme Court case about the law schools and the military recruiters. And one of the arguments was the schools don't want to appear to be endorsing the military's don't ask, don't tell policy. And the question is, well, could they have put up a sign? You're dealing with law students here, and the answer is yes. If they had put up a sign reserved for private ceremony or something like that, if they had not done what they did here, which is put together the program, and the program wouldn't have happened if a teacher hadn't done it, the students were too busy. That's what they ask you to believe. The students were too busy. And to me, that is such a giveaway. Because if this was really, I don't think that they put together, if the Boy Scouts meet at the school auditorium, they're not going to say, well, we'll put together your program for you if you're too busy. I think that's really stretching it. The whole idea, the testimony that was heard here that teachers get to use the school copier for their own use was certainly news to Steve Warnick, who certainly had many opportunities that he would have taken advantage of had he known of that policy. That can't be the policy. The question here, and I think this is why the Supreme Court cases are important, is that you look at whether or not a reasonable, objective observer is going to get the message that the school is endorsing religion. I think a reasonably objective observer absolutely gets the message. All you got to do is look at the program and look at the circumstances. The order to me that the trial judge gave was certainly clear enough, and if it wasn't, the school district had an opportunity to ask this court to clarify it. Mr. Archer gave this bizarre reading of the order where he said, I thought you meant that I just had to have the graduation and the baccalaureate separate. Well, there's absolutely no basis for that whatsoever, and it was obviously made up after the fact. You have to look at the history. And in the recent cases that this court has decided on issues such as the Ten Commandments being displayed in various places, the court's always saying, look at the history, look at the background. And here we look at the history. There had been a history of repeated religious baccalaureates that came to a stop because of a court order.
I'm a little bit uncertain about the connection between the orchestration, direct subjective involvement of certain individuals in the process, which seems to me to be a subjective inquiry on the one hand, the ultimate finding of the district court, which seems to me to depend on what an objective observer would believe was happening without regard to what subjective intent of the defendants was. Can you help me with that?
Yes, I think I can. I think it's important. I think both subjective intent and objective appearance are important on two different things. As Mr. Bloom said, there are really two issues. One was, did it violate the Constitution? And there, I think that's where it's particularly important to look at the objective appearance.
Okay. And the other thing is the contempt thing?
The contempt is the subjective intent. And I think,
but I thought we were mainly here about the contempt. Is that wrong?
I think we're mainly here about the contempt, but Mr. Bloom has also raised the issue saying that it was not unconstitutional in the first place to run this program. So that's where I think that's important.
I see.
I don't think that a reasonable person can look at the facts of this particular case and say this was some type of an independent private group. This was clearly the senior class, as senior class of the school, under the guidance of its advisors, who did almost all of the work And the only reason I have to say almost is because they didn't personally invite the preachers. I tried to find out, was there an event outside of the school meetings on school grounds where things were decided? And the answer was no, there's no evidence of that. The only evidence about this, in other words, if you look at the evidence, there is no evidence of any independent student involvement whatsoever except inviting the preachers. I think the whole equal access issue is contrived. There's no evidence at all that the students as a private citizen or social group did it. And if you look at some of these equal access cases, we're talking about groups that are otherwise formed. We're not talking about a group that is identical. They just all happen to be members of the senior class. If there had been some group where a segment of the senior class had said, we would like to get together and have a ceremony or have a dance or have a function or whatever, that might have presented an entirely different issue. There's absolutely no evidence of that. I think that the important thing here is that when you look at all of the circumstances, it's very obvious that the school district was trying to send a message.
But back to your reasonable objective observer, suppose all of these other things, as I outlined, had happened. It was purely student work, off the school district, no facilities used. But if the reasonable objective observer didn't know about that, wouldn't he or she automatically think it was a school-sponsored event?
Well, I think there'd be a couple things. First, you could put up a sign that says private event or reserved, like you would any time you do when you make a room available to people. That would send the message it was a private event. Second, if the students had done their own program, I think it would have been pretty obvious that the students had done their own program. They probably would have put down the person who was responsible for it, probably would have wanted to take credit for it. In other words,
you're kind of asking us to make almost some factual presumptions on this, which we really can't do. Certainly it's in the record that one of the students asked her father, mm-hmm. to participate, who was a minister.
That's correct.
And the minister did so. And we don't know where the other preacher came from, or at least maybe there's something in the record that tells us. But.
I believe one of the sponsors said, now remember, none of the students actually testified, but I think one of the sponsors said that one of the students had invited the other preacher, but I think that's what the evidence was.
And was that the sponsor that prepared the programs and
so on? Don't remember if it was this one that prepared the programs or the other ones. And remember also, another thing that made this appear to be a school function is the two student sponsors are the ones handing out the programs.
Well, that certainly is in the record that's reflected in the district court's opinion.
I think that the evidence is clear in this case. Now, I don't know. At some point, there may be an advisory opinion out there as to some way that they can continue to send this to create this image, but I think as far as the school district is concerned, it's obviously involved in this one, and it's obviously a direct affront to the order of the court, and if the court's orders are going to be respected, something has to be done about it. I believe, unless there are any more questions, that covers what I had to say about this.
I've got one more question.
Yes, sir.
You filed a 28J letter attaching that to Dover case.
Yes, I did.
It's about 45 pages or so, maybe just 43. Are there any particular pages you'd like to ask us to read?
Yes, but I can't tell you because the original copy that I had of it is a 139-page version of it.
I'd heard about that one.
Yeah, that was my fault. I sent up one copy.
I just thought if there was something specific we should read rather than look through 43 pages when we would read it.
The focus is on the discussion of the Supreme Court decisions about the appearance and how important it is that the school not appear to be endorsing a particular religious doctrine, and I tell you, once you get to the part about the science, that certainly is a different issue.
That's a district court opinion and a court in the Third Circuit jurisdiction.
Yeah, I
just case out of Pennsylvania.
Yes, sir. I when I read it, I heard all kinds of echoes of the case I was getting ready to come up and argue, and I think my original 28J was like 2 days after the decision came down.
It's an interesting opinion. I haven't read it word for word because it gets very detailed. But I remember reading about it when it came out in the press about interesting comments the judge made about. Rather, this case came to us as the result of the activism of an ill-informed faction of a school board, aided by a national public. Well, anyway, the breathtaking inanity of the board's decision is evident. Very strong language, but it's an interesting opinion.
Your Honor, I believe when you read that opinion, you'll find that the wording is moderate, to say the least.
Very good.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Bloom.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, I have to agree with the court. That is extraordinary language in the Fitzmiller case, and it is no more applicable, however, to the case we're arguing today than our Santa Fe Independent School District versus Doe or Lee versus Wiseman. Let me first say, getting back to the contempt issue, that the U.S. Supreme Court has already said that a contempt order must be clear and certain. It says that no one should be held in contempt for violating an ambiguous order. A contempt should be clear and certain. And what Mr. Schulze has told this court is that we have to assume all of these things from Judge Wright's order that we're supposed to do. We're supposed to put up a sign. We're supposed to have disclaimers on the program. The order from Judge Wright prohibiting us from having religious ceremonies as part of a school-sponsored function doesn't say that we have to do those things. That is certainly not clear and certain, but that apparently is the standard to which Judge Wright held.
I think what Mr. Schulze was saying is that might satisfy the order, but that's not the case that we have before us.
Well, that's exactly true. It might very well have satisfied Mr. Warnock if there is indeed any way of satisfying that man.
I said might have satisfied the order.
Right.
The district court's order.
Right. The district.
But we don't care about satisfying Mr. Warnock. We care about satisfying the Constitution and the district court's order.
Well, I understand that. He's the one that keeps suing us.
I know. He does. He's going to continue to do that.
Well, let's hope not. We did fire him, but that was because he said he called Mr. Archer about every name in the book, told him that he could.
One point that the district court made was that the school had no policy on this subject, and what's the significance of that finding?
Well, I don't know. We weren't directed to enact a policy. We were directed not to have a religious baccalaureate service as a school-sponsored function. We complied with that. Now, Mr. Schulze and Mr. Warnock can take these little incidences that occurred with students asking the teacher to prepare the program, said there was no evidence of meetings off campus. Well, we don't know whether there are meetings off campus or not to produce the baccalaureate program, because we didn't participate in them if they were. Now, if we get on to the Establishment Clause issue, that relates very clearly to the contempt issue, because Mr. Schulze has argued that this is just like Fitzmiller, this is just like, and Judge Wright also, this is especially just like Santa Fe Independent School District versus Doe and Lee versus Wiseman. We're entitled to have the doctrine of stare decisis applied. And I'm not telling this court anything it doesn't know. But what that requires is that cases which are apposite to a particular circumstance be applied, and cases which are not apposite not be applied. Santa Fe Independent School District versus Doe and Lee versus Wiseman both involved school functions. There was no argument that they were school-sponsored functions, football game and graduation, respectively. It was a school, high school football game. It was a high school graduation, Lee versus Wiseman. This case, however, is covered by Good News Club versus Milford and Lamb's Chapel versus Center Moriche. Now, the difference there is that in both of those cases, Good News Club and Lamb's Chapel, there was religious activity, but it was, and it was on campus, but it was not part of a school-sponsored function. Now, Mr. Schulze can argue all day long that we were back to business as usual because we fired him and we knew he was gone. Well, he wasn't gone. Mr. Warnock attended this baccalaureate service. And he keeps attributing the worst motives possible to the defendants, Mr. Archer and Mr. Eads, without anything to support that other than Mr. Warnock's supposition, and this from a man who, in the original case, opined that some third-grade girls were conspiring against him. So what we have is a case where...
Well, what's that got to do with what's before us?
Well, Your Honor, what I'm talking about is that's the only indication on the part of, or only basis on the part of the plaintiff that this was a school-sponsored function. He assumed it was. He believed it was because he saw teachers handing out programs, and he saw Mr. Archer and Mr. Eads there. Now, as far as handing out programs, Ms. Merrick and Ms. Robinson testified that they got there and saw that nobody was doing that, so they thought they'd go ahead and do that on their own. They weren't directed. In fact, the testimony is very clear. When asked whether Mr. Archer and Mr. Eads had any participation or directed them at all in this baccalaureate service, the answer was no, none at all. And they testified they knew there was, the school wasn't supposed to participate in or sponsor or orchestrate or produce the baccalaureate service. And as a result, my time is up, and we respectfully request that the court reverse the decision by Judge Wright. Thank you.
Very well. The case is submitted. Take a break or keep going? We'll be in recess for a short time.